Jackie Roble with the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Nutrition Action Health Letter is the flagship publication of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Published 10 times a year, Nutrition Action provides honest, unbiased science-based advice on nutrition and health. It's the world's largest circulation nutrition newsletter, bringing the latest nutrition news and advice to more than 500,000 readers. Nutrition Action is totally free of advertisings, so we're free to blow the whistle on products that aren't what they pretend to be, and to applaud the good ones. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The following articles are from the October and November edition of the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Are you eating too many refined carbs? By Bonnie Liebman. There's no good evidence that low-carb diets are a magic bullet for weight loss, but many people eat too many refined carbs, not just from sweets, but from oversized servings of pasta, pizza, burritos, burgers, and sandwiches made with white flour, along with the chips or fries that are served on the side. Low-carb diets are hot. Will they make the product pounds melt away? No better than other diets. But Americans do have a carb problem. On average, we get about half of our calories from carbs, and roughly 70% of them come from refined grains and potatoes, fruit juice, and added sugars. They should come from vegetables, whole fruits, beans, and whole grains. What happens when you overdo refined carbs? You can end up with carbohydrate-induced high blood triglyceride levels from eating too many refined carbs, says Alice H. Lichtenstein, director of the Cardiovascular Nutrition Laboratory at Tufts University. Triglycerides, a type of fat found in foods and in the body, climb when carbs overwhelm the liver. Refined carbs get rapidly absorbed, so there's a tremendous flood of carbohydrates, usually in the form of glucose, coming into the system, explains Lichtenstein. Some of the glucose comes from sugars, and some comes from the starch in grains, potatoes, and other, well, starchy foods. Starches are long chains of glucose. The liver is stuck trying to figure out what to do with the glucose, says Lichtenstein. The liver's capacity to store it as glycogen is exceeded, so it uses the glucose to make fats. The fats get packaged into triglycerides, which the liver then sends out into the bloodstreams, raising blood triglycerides. The evidence that triglycerides cause heart disease isn't as strong as it is for LDL cholesterol, says Mir Stamfer, professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. But most researchers would be concerned about high triglycerides increasing the risk of atherosclerosis. High triglycerides often occur together with low HDL, or good cholesterol, notes Stamfer. They're two out of five features of the metabolic syndrome, which signals a higher risk of type 2 diabetes and heart disease. Back in 1988, one in four adults had the metabolic syndrome, thanks largely to bulging waist. It's now one in three. A lean and active person can eat more carbohydrates from grains and added sugars without an adverse metabolic impact, says Stamfer. There's a myth that the government and health organizations are still recommending a low-fat diet, says Lichtenstein, but that hasn't been the case since 2000. And even before 2000, the Heart Association and the government recommended capping fat at 30, not 15% of calories. The average American adult gets about 35% of calories from fat. The current recommendation is to replace meat and dairy fat with unsaturated fat, primarily polyunsaturated fat, not to cut all fats, says Lichtenstein. What's optimal? If 70% of calories from carbs is too high, what level? It's not clear. The OmniHeart trial offers some clues. It pitted a healthy DASH, or dietary approach to stop hypertension, higher carb diet, roughly 60% of calories from carbs, against a higher protein diet and a higher unsaturated fat diet, each with about 50% of calories from carbs. All three diets were loaded with fruits and vegetables, high in fiber, and low in saturated fat and added sugars. When people went from their typical American diet to any of the three healthy diets, there was a dramatic improvement in cardiovascular risk. However, triglycerides declined only the higher protein and higher unsaturated fat diets. Granted, the higher carb diet had more fruit juices and sugars, including those in juice, may boost triglycerides more than starches do. More protein didn't mean that the OmniHeart volunteers were eating fatty steak or cheese, he notes. Roughly half of the protein served in OmniHeart was from vegetable sources. So roughly half came from foods like beans, nuts, and tofu. The rest was largely from animal sources like chicken, fish, and low-fat dairy. Still, OmniHeart's big takeaway is that healthy carbs, mostly from vegetables and fruit, are the clear winners. Are high triglycerides the only downside to extra carbs? It's too early to say. But preliminary results from the OmniCarb study suggest that more carbs may also mean higher levels of blood sugar over time. The OmniCarb researchers thought that low glycemic carbs might make the body's insulin better at lowering blood sugar levels, but when they fed people a healthy DASH diet with low glycemic carbs, like pasta instead of instant potatoes, steel-cut oats instead of instant oatmeal, and apples instead of bananas, nothing improved much. In contrast, when the researchers cut carbs from about 60% of calories to 40%, triglycerides fell remarkably. What's more, cutting carbs lowered fructosamine, an intermediate term marker of blood sugar levels when people were eating low glycemic carbs. Fructosamine is similar to hemoglobin A1C and is a good predictor of who will get type 2 diabetes. Further studies are needed to confirm OmniCarb's preliminary findings, since most studies have only tested advice to eat low-carb diets and have looked only at fasting blood sugar or glucose tolerance. But given what we know so far, says exchanging carbs for more unsaturated fat and protein may have the best benefits for blood sugar. If you replace some of your carbs with unsaturated fat, you're moving toward a Mediterranean diet. Just don't confuse that with what you'd get at a typical Italian or Greek restaurant. It's not pasta and pizza with a Mediterranean flair, says Stampfer. I don't think people understand that a Mediterranean diet is low in red meat. Some features are clear, at least to researchers. We tend to think of more beans, fruits, vegetables, and fish, says Tufts' Alice Lichtenstein. And most people agree that primary fat is olive oil. But the definition of a Mediterranean-style diet varies. Some people project on it everything they think is good about a diet, notes Lichtenstein. Take whole grains. Many researchers call them part of a Mediterranean diet, but whether it's pasta or bread or rice, I've seen very little whole grain in the Mediterranean countries I've been to, says Lichtenstein. And even if it were whole grain, you'd have to eat fewer carbs than what many Americans are used to in order to make room for the olive oil. The government's dietary guidelines for Americans recommend 6 servings of grain in a 2,000-calorie diet, and those servings are just also half a cup. So you could get a day's worth of grain in one plate of spaghetti and meatballs at the Cheesecake Factory, and those 6 servings don't include potatoes. White potatoes are similar to refined grains in the way the body uses them, says Lichtenstein, and many meals have both grains and potatoes. That's carbs with a side of carbs and a dessert of carbs, even if you don't add a sugary drink. More carbs. Take a burrito. It's often chicken or meat plus a pile of rice wrapped in a huge white flour tortilla. When we talk about increasing vegetable intake, we're really talking about green leafy vegetables and cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts, not potatoes, says Lichtenstein. And make sure your grains are whole. There's such a carb phobia out there now that some people aren't getting the benefit of whole grains, says Stampfer. But the optimal diet should have some. When, if you're having grains, make it 100% whole grain. Their intact fiber may help prevent constipation, keep your gut bacteria in shape, and protect your heart. That isn't just on target for your health. It's close, though not identical, to the target for curbing the planetary damage that our children may face in 2050. Hot Topics, What to Know About the Latest Trends by Caitlin Dow. Are anti-nutrients robbing your body of vitamins and minerals? Does your liver need a boost from supplements and coffee enemas? What's behind gluten sensitivity? Here's what to know about the nutrition trends du jour. Anti-nutrients can be a source of severe food cravings that distract you from whatever you're trying to accomplish, or they can rob you of nutrients and interfere with your hormone function, wearing down different systems in your body and causing slow performance declines over time, claims Dave Asprey in his book, The Bulletproof Diet. Are you being robbed? Anti-nutrients are compounds in food that can interfere with the absorption of some nutrients, says Reed Mengels, a retired adjunct associate professor of nutrition at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, but they may not matter. For example, lectins. They're found in whole grains, beans, and some other foods. If not thoroughly cooked, lectins can damage cells lining the digestive tract and may prevent nutrients from being absorbed. But who's eating raw grains or beans? Oxalate. Spinach has some calcium, but you don't absorb most of it because oxalate ties it up, says Mengels. But most people don't rely on spinach for their calcium. Goitrogens. They're found in soy and cruciferous vegetables like kale and Brussels sprouts, and they can interfere with the thyroid gland's ability to take up iodine and make thyroid hormones. But as long as you're getting enough iodine, which most people are, there's no need to worry, notes Mengels. The phytate in whole grains, beans, nuts, and seeds binds to zinc and iron, so you absorb less of the minerals than you do from eating fish, poultry, or meat. Of all the anti-nutrients, I think about phytates the most because they're in a lot of foundational foods for vegetarians, says Mengels. But people eating plant-heavy diets needn't worry. In one study, researchers fed 21 young women a vegetarian diet or a typical U.S. diet for 8 weeks each. The vegetarian diet had more beans, whole grains, and vegetables, and roughly triple the phytate of the non-vegetarian diet. The vegetarian diet contained 14% less zinc, and the women absorbed 21% less of it. So they got 35% less zinc on the vegetarian than on the non-vegetarian diet. But their blood zinc levels were only 5% lower, and they were still within the normal range. The study's results suggest that the women absorbed enough zinc to replace what they excreted, and that zinc requirements can be met with a vegetarian diet rich in whole grains and legumes, says study author Janet Hunt, retired research nutritionist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The women also absorbed roughly 70% less non-heme iron from the vegetarian diet. Non-heme iron, which is found in plant-based food, isn't as well absorbed as heme iron, which is found in meat, poultry, and seafood. But the women had no signs of iron deficiency or anemia when they were on the vegetarian diet, says Hunt. That's consistent with other studies that show reduced iron stores, but minimal or no difference in the occurrence of iron deficiency anemia in vegetarians. Hunt's takeaway? The body does a pretty good job at adapting to changes in the amount and availability of minerals in the diet to maintain an equilibrium. So much for robbing your body of nutrients. What's more, sprouting or fermenting can slash phytates. Fermented soy products like tempeh have less phytate than tofu, Mengels noted. You'll also get less phytate from bread leavened by yeast as opposed to muffins or biscuits made with baking powder. It's absurd to knock whole grains, beans, nuts, and veggies out of your diet to avoid something that's probably not harming your nutritional status in the first place. Liver cleanse. With exposure to environmental toxins, toxic body care products, and processed foods, most people are in desperate need of a serious detox, proclaims Drakes.com, the website of chiropractor Josh Axe. A liver cleanse is a great way to do this. Axe is talking about coffee enemas, juice only, or other restrictive diets, and liver cleanse supplements with ingredients like milk thistle, turmeric, and dandelion root. Do you need them? The liver is the metabolic powerhouse of the body, says Monica Tinkopa, director of the Michigan Medicine Non-Alcoholic Fatty Liver Disease Clinic. It processes nutrients and metabolizes medications. It also plays a vital role in clearing toxins. But unless you have severe liver disease or are exposed to a high dose of a toxic chemical, your body has a natural capacity to process whatever you ingest as well as the waste products your body makes. Tinkopa's bottom line? There's no evidence that these supplements help boost the liver's ability to clear toxins. And although most liver cleanse supplements appear to be safe, a few cases of liver damage have been linked to supplements like turmeric, so I emphasize to patients that there's no benefit in trying them. What's more, when researchers tested roughly 100 milk thistle supplements, 60% were contaminated with yeast or mold. And X's enthusiasm notwithstanding, there are no grounds for thinking that coffee enemas do anything. What's the evidence that they have a stimulating effect that increases bile flow, helping to jumpstart both your gallbladder and your liver, as X claims? Zilch. And coffee enemas don't end well for some people. In one case, a woman developed severe inflammation of the colon and rectum after a coffee enema, notes Tinkopa. And 3 deaths have been linked to coffee enemas, possibly due to a bacterial infection or electrolyte imbalances. Gluten sensitivity. The science is in. Why gluten sensitivity is probably fake, ran the headline on BusinessInsider.com in 2017. Gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, can cause intestinal damage in people with celiac disease. That's why they need to avoid those grains. Some people who don't have celiac disease have been diagnosed with non-celiac gluten sensitivity because they report symptoms like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, bloating, headache, fatigue, or joint pain when they eat gluten. What exactly is gluten sensitivity? The honest answer at this point is that we don't really know, says Daniel Leffler, director of clinical research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. There's no lab test to diagnose gluten sensitivity, but there is a group of patients who don't have celiac but have symptoms that are reproducibly improved when they avoid gluten and get worse when they're exposed, Leffler explains. We just don't know how large that group is. It may be small. In half a dozen studies that fed either gluten or a placebo to people with suspected gluten sensitivity, only about 15% had symptoms after eating gluten, but not after eating the placebo. So why do so many people think they're sensitive to gluten? More than likely, it's not one population, says Leffler. That is, what doctors currently call gluten sensitivity is probably a melting pot of many conditions, only one of which is a true sensitivity to gluten. Wheat is a complex food made of many different proteins and molecules, Leffler explains. Some people may react to something in wheat other than gluten. For example, cutting back on FODMAPs, fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, curbs digestive complaints in some people. FODMAPs are poorly absorbed carbohydrates that are in a long list of foods, including dairy, beans, wheat, prunes, asparagus, onions, and cauliflower. In the study that triggered the Business Insider headline, 59 Norwegian adults without celiac, who also were following a gluten-free diet, ate a muesli bar made with either gluten or fructin, a FODMAP in wheat and other foods, or a placebo bar every day for 1 week each. Overall, the volunteers reported worse gut symptoms during the week. Their bars had fructin rather than gluten or the placebo. That doesn't mean that gluten sensitivity is probably fake, as Business Insider claimed, but it's worth considering a low FODMAP diet if you have digestive complaints. It can be a successful treatment for people with irritable bowel syndrome-like symptoms, says Leffler. FODMAP sensitivity is probably more common than gluten sensitivity, he adds. I've had patients who respond better to a low FODMAP diet and others who do better on a gluten-free diet. It just takes a bit of trial and error to figure out what works for each person. Some people might be what Leffler and others call celiac light. They are clearly sensitive to gluten and have the genetic markers for celiac disease, but their blood tests don't meet the criteria for celiac disease. Another possibility, for some, it could be an issue with the microbiome, says Leffler. Different types of bacteria may influence how the gut reacts to wheat, which could explain some symptoms. If you think you're sensitive to gluten, don't change your diet until you get tested for celiac disease. That's rule 1, 2, and 3, says Leffler. Why? If you cut out gluten, a blood test might not pick up on the marker for celiac disease. If you already stopped eating gluten, Leffler recommends talking to your doctor to create a plan to reintroduce it so that you can be tested. It's important to get tested because unmanaged celiac is linked to other long-term health problems like osteoporosis and lymphoma, he notes. And celiac is hereditary, so getting tested can let family members know if they're also at risk. Leffler's bottom line, in the future, it's likely that we won't talk about gluten sensitivity as one disorder, but as many disorders that result in sensitivity to gluten or other components of wheat. And now, a recipe from the healthy cook, Kate Sherwood. Italian bean and kale stew. 1 lemon, 5 cloves garlic, thinly sliced, 3 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1 15-ounce can no salt added cannellini beans, 1 15-ounce can no salt added red kidney beans, 1 pound baby kale, 1/2 teaspoon kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper, 1/4 cup freshly grated Parmesan cheese. Zest and juice 1/2 the lemon. Slice the other 1/2 and reserve for serving. In a large heavy skillet over medium heat, saute the garlic in the oil until golden, 1 to 2 minutes. Add the beans and their liquid. Stir in the kale a few handfuls at a time. Cook until tender, 1 to 2 minutes. Season with the salt, pepper, and lemon zest and juice. Serve with the Parmesan and lemon slices. And there you have a 15-minute meal that serves 4. Breakfast on the Run, A Quick Guide to Coffee Shops by Lindsay Moyer. What's new and what's good? Here's how to pick our Customize Your Way to Better sandwiches, boxes, bowls, bites, beverages, and more. Our examples are from chains, but the advice should hold up pretty much anywhere. Egg sandwiches. Some of the best egg sandwiches? Panera. The yummy avocado egg white and spinach with cheese and tomatoes beats just about any sandwich on the menu, especially those with bacon, ham, or sausage. Processed meats are linked to a higher risk of colorectal cancer. Tip: you can drop the meat or add avocado to any Panera sandwich. Starbucks. Go for the 230-calorie reduced-fat turkey bacon and cage-free egg white, which comes in a part whole grain English muffin. Try it, sans bacon. It trounces the 500-calorie sandwiches that come on croissants. Au bon pan. Ask for egg whites and avocado on a skinny wheat bagel, which is all whole grain. And wherever you are, customize. It's easier if the chain has an app. Even McDonald's will drop the Canadian bacon and add tomatoes for 50 cents or so to an Egg McMuffin. Look for whole grains and veggies or avocado instead of processed meats. Wraps. Why not try a wrap? They're often at least 1/2 whole grain and roomy enough to stuff in a few veggies. Panera, the Mediterranean egg white. Egg whites, feta, tomatoes, spinach, and white bean pesto on a 63% whole grain wrap is a winner. The Chipotle chicken scrambled egg and avocado is also decent. Skip the Gouda cheese. Starbucks. The sodium, 830 milligrams in the spinach, feta, and cage-free egg white wrap is higher than Panera's Mediterranean wrap at 650 milligrams, and its spinach isn't as tasty as Panera's fresh greens, but a sandwich with no ham, bacon, or sausage beats the rest at the box. Look for a veggie-rich wrap. Want eggs but not in a sandwich? Bypass Panera's petite bakes. Egg soufflés. Each has enough croissant dough and cheese to supply some 500-plus calories and a day's worth of saturated fat. Instead, try Egg Bites. Starbucks egg white and red pepper sous vide egg bites. Egg whites, cheese, and veggies offer 13 grams of protein per 170-calorie 2-bite order. And bowls. Some small chains like Le Pain Quotidien and Bluestone Lane offer breakfast bowls with 1 egg perched atop kale, cabbage, and avocado. Imagine that! Look for less white flour and cheese. Oatmeal. Oatmeal is 100% whole grain and just about everywhere. Some tips. Most oats are sweetened with 1 to 3 teaspoons of added sugar. Starbucks brown sugar or agave syrup comes in a packet, so it's easy to skip or cut back. Most chains will leave it out if you ask. Texture. Our favorites, chewy, nutty, steel-cut oats at Corner Bakery Cafe in Panera. Runner-up, Au Bon Pan's creamy rolled oats. All 3 beat the just-add-water oats at McDonald's and Starbucks. Toppings. Fresh fruit, like in Starbucks' hearty blueberry oatmeal, isn't easy to come by. Second best, dried fruit and nuts. The chocolate chips on Oban's self-serve toppings bar turn breakfast into a dessert. Look for a way to skip the added sugar. Yogurt. Too bad many parfaits layer only a smattering of sweetened fruit between sweetened granola and sweetened yogurt. For example, Starbucks Berry Trio Parfait, non-fat vanilla yogurt, berries, granola, has 4 teaspoons of added sugar. That's a third of a day's limit. The Lemon Crunch Parfait has no whole fruit and 26 grams of added sugar, thanks in part to its sugary lemon curd. Consider many Starbucks sell Siggy's yogurt. A 5.3-ounce, 0% vanilla has a mere teaspoon of added sugar, but just as much protein as either parfait. It also packs less than half the calories. Want fruit? Add a banana. Most Starbucks stock them near the cash register. Look for plain or less sweet yogurt and fresh fruit. Baked goods. Most of the bakery cases white flour, sugar, buttercream, or oil. Donuts and scones, expect 300 to 400 calories of mostly white flour plus sugar and a quarter to half a day saturated fat. Croissants and Danish, these uber buttered pastries reach half to three quarters of a day's saturated fat and 300 to 500 calories. Muffins and cinnamon rolls, usually oversized, and we're talking about 10 teaspoons of added sugar. Even bran muffins can hit 400 calories, if you can find them. Whole grain bagels. Even many whole grain or sprouted grain bagels are roughly half white flour. Look for half a whole grain bagel or a piece of toast smeared with a healthier fat, nut butter, hummus, or mashed avocado, rather than cream cheese. Coffee drinks. A shot of espresso, an Americano, or a coffee has next to no calories. Each packet of sugar adds 10 to 20. The takeaway? The best drinks mix coffee or espresso with milk, water, or ice, not sugary syrups, cream, or whipped cream. Here's a quick rundown. All are for Starbucks Grandes, unless noted. Iced coffee, go unsweetened to skip the syrups, 5 teaspoons of sugar. Cold foam, try the new cold brew with cold foam. It's 35 calories worth of cold brewed coffee, topped with cold, non-fat milk, foamed with a little vanilla syrup. That beats the 80-calorie Cascara cold foam and the 230-calorie salted cream cold foam. Cappuccino misto or latte. A cappuccino's espresso plus foamed not-fat milk means just 80 calories and a nice dose of calcium and protein. It's about the same as a non-fat misto. A non-fat latte has more milk, calcium, protein, and calories. Sweetens espresso drinks. The Cocoa Cloud Macchiato, Cinnamon Dolce Latte, and white chocolate mocha go from bad to worse. And skip the whip. It adds at least 70 calories of cream and sugar. That's all the time we have for nutrition news. Until next time, I'm Jackie Roble for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is readily available as a podcast after the initial broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening, and have a happy, healthy New Year.